Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by Media Clip, Advertech Printing, and Independent Photo Imagers.
Hello again and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by Drew Donaldson, a serial entrepreneur, growth strategist, and founder of Grow House, a marketing strategy and execution firm serving small businesses all around this great country of ours. Drew comes to us from Richland, Pennsylvania. Hey, Drew, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Gary. How are you?
Good. That was the most enthusiastic introduction I've done in a while because I'm very excited to talk to you. Unfortunately, the listeners didn't hear the 45 minutes of us yakking about technology before we started recording. So but we've really used up all our time, and thank you for listening. Actually, Drew, what we didn't get into actually was your background of how you started to get into this business, where you started and how you got to start found Grow House, which you did during the pandemic. So I really want to hear that story.
So my kind of obsession with small business ownership started when I was a kid. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. They both owned their own businesses. And so I really experienced small business ownership firsthand. You know, I did filing in my mom's office at her insurance agency. I helped my dad plant flowers at his greenhouse. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing is I saw them interacting with the general public, and I saw how they sold things and how they treated customers. Mm-hmm. And how much pride they took in the work they did. Mm-hmm. You know, one memory that stands out to me still to this day was I was probably like 6 years old, and I was riding my dad's pickup truck, and he was an ag banker. So he lends money to farmers that need to buy equipment and cattle and all of that. It's a very specialized kind of form of banking that, you know, unless you live in rural America, you probably don't even know really exists.
Right.
But out where I live, if you go to a bank, they're going to have an ag banker that just works with farmers.
Right.
And so that was what my dad did. And we were driving down the road one day, and he points to a manure spreader ahead of us. And he says, "You see that? I gave that guy the money to buy that." Mm-hmm. And I said, "How do you know that's the one?" And he said, "Because there's only one in the county, and I helped him get it." Hmm. And like the pride he had that he helped this, you know, small cattle farmer go get this manure spreader. And of all things, a manure spreader.
Right. I'm trying not to go with the poop joke here, but
yeah, it was important to him that he helped.
One was important to that guy too, right? I mean, that was the thing.
Of course.
I mean, not only did your father, you know, gain a sense of, you know, accomplishment and achievement for doing that, but he helped somebody else achieve their dream by spreading manure.
And that's the whole thing, is that it was the impact, the immediate impact that small business owners have on their community and the people they serve. It's not like a big corporation where, you know, if you work for Walmart, you're so separated from the end user at the end of the day.
Right.
If you're in Walmart corporate or a director or vice president of Walmart, you're not really seeing the impact,
right?
You know, and so that, but when you're on the front lines and you run the business and you're directly responsible for that person, it's a profound sense of place in this world. And so I really fell in love with that. My whole family, come from a family of farmers. So I saw it all throughout. Everybody we associated with was in the small business arena practically. And so that's where it really started. When I got out of college, I really was, I knew in my heart that I was not meant to work for other people, that I was meant to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. And much to my mom's chagrin, she did not like the fact that I did not want a 401k and a steady job and a 9-to-5 and a paycheck. I was like, no, I want to do this thing.
What did you go to school for? What was your degree in?
Well, film and television.
Okay.
That's actually where I started. So my first businesses were production studios and creative service businesses. Mm-hmm. And the reason I actually closed those down and stopped working in those was because I had such a hard time with marketing. Because I was doing really, really well. I had award-winning films out there. Mm-hmm. I was working for, like, every once in a while, I'd work for a really big client. I'd have really, you know, I'd be really proud of the work. It would look better than anything else anyone was doing that was at my level. Like, obviously, I'm not Warner Brothers, right? Like, I can't compete at that level. But for the small little production companies that were doing the work I was doing, I was outperforming. And yet, I could not get consistent work to save my life. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the only difference between what I was doing and what these other guys were doing less quality work, but more of it, was marketing. They had to be doing something different in how they're marketing. And so that's where my marketing obsession really was born, was that I just.
So I'm just curious, when you went to photography and film school, did they teach any of this? Did they have like a business track or anything on that? There was nothing on that.
No. In fact, when I first got out, I tried to be the good little student and do the internship thing. And I did it. I took an internship at a studio in New York and I worked there for like 6 weeks. And I called the guidance counselor at the college and I said, they have me getting coffee. Like, I'm not doing anything. I haven't even gone into a studio yet. Like, all they do is they send me out in the morning to get a bowl of fruit and they send me out at lunch to get lunch. And then they send me to get coffee before everybody leaves for the day. And that's all I do. And then the rest of the time, I'm just sitting at my desk with my laptop, like tinkering around in Ableton. Like, I'm not doing anything related to sound in this business. And he said, well, that's just the industry. You just have to suffer through it. And I was like, what if I don't want to suffer? Like, what if I spent all this money getting all this education. I already have like film credits, like feature film credits at this point. I already have album credits on different music projects. Like, I have all these credits. I should be able to just get a job. Like, I wasn't a slouch in college. I worked my butt off. Right. I worked in radio in college. Like, I was already out there. And then I come and, oh no, you have to be, you know, an errand boy for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so that really was frustrating to me because they didn't give any support. I went back to the guidance counselor again and I said, well, what else can you get me? And he's like, there's nothing else to get. You just got to get coffee for a couple of years until someone decides to give you a shot. And I was like, I'm not putting my faith or my future in the hands of some like 20 something hoping they like me. Mm-hmm. That's not a future I want to invest in.
Right.
That was the time where it really solidified that I just have to do something for myself.
Right.
And so I stopped looking for internships and I started really going out there and trying to build a freelance business. And even with that, I called them and I was like, okay, I have a freelance business now. What do I do? It was absolutely hopeless.
Oh, wow.
I even went back and got a master's degree in business because I thought that would be the solution. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It didn't. It just left me with more questions and less answers. The way I overcame it was just doing the work. Like, I just went out, I did as much work as I could. I built up as big enough of a portfolio as possible. I had a woman named Lucy Gerasi at St. John's University take a shot at me and brought me in to lead their video production department. And that's where I really I was like, okay, now I have this gig. I have a goal in mind. I'm going to build this, their internal video department. And I'm just going to learn everything I can about marketing so that I never have to feel that way again about, you know, chasing my tail, trying to get clients.
Right.
And so that was really it. Once I had that experience under my belt, then it was consulting and then running my own shop.
Because I find that that's sort of the thing in the creative's business education complex, whatever you want to call that. You know, there is not really a connection to how you're actually going to sell what you're doing. I've talked to a few photographers on the podcast who basically they were like you. Yeah. I mean, they learned the process of setting up studio, putting up lights and what an f-stop is and all that stuff. And they did some student work to build a portfolio, but there really wasn't anything about, you know, hey, how do you network? What are some basic marketing things you can do? You know, all that stuff is just kind of lacking in that world. It's shocking, actually.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with ShareMe Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using ShareMe Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at shareme.chat.
I mean, I honestly feel like I was the last, and probably not even the last. I was probably one class after where it was really necessary to go to college for any kind of creative arts.
Right.
Honestly, if you're a student out there right now and you're considering going to college for creative arts, save your money.
Yeah.
If I could have gone back and really looked at what I should have been doing, what I should have been doing is spending the time trying to get an internship right out of high school.
Right.
Because then I wouldn't have felt the pressure of, oh my gosh, I have this huge student loan that I need to pay.
Right.
And these people want me to go get coffee and aren't even willing to pay me. Well, when you're 18, you can live at home with your parents for a couple more years. You can cut your teeth. You can get the 5 years in. You can learn all this stuff. Plus, I hate to break it to you, but everything you learn in college is online now. Like,
right,
you
exactly.
can take free photography classes. You can take, you know, from really good people, like really talented photographers. Right, sure. And videographers. Yeah.
No, I think the education industrial complex, if you will, is going to be in for a wake up call in the next few years, definitely because of this. Speaking of online, you do a lot of online stuff with Grow House. So talk how you kind of started Grow House in the depths of a pandemic, which probably said, oh my gosh, we got to do some online stuff.
So I was like 5 years into this long-term consulting engagement with a media publisher in New York. Mm-hmm. And I had started building this career as kind of a fixer. I would come into companies that needed help with their video departments, and then I would fix the video department, and then I would leave.
You were like a video MacGyver.
Yeah, but for production process, yeah, and automation. And then through that, I'd started learning more about marketing and implementing more of that. And so now it wasn't just video, but it was webinars and it was email marketing and it was all this other stuff. And so I was running this department with like a $2 or $3 million pipeline, working with all of the major like financial players. So your Merrill Lynch's and your Voya's and your Franklin Templeton's and all of the big like investment banks in New York as clients. So very demanding clients, a lot of, not particularly interesting work, but a lot of it. Right. It wasn't like, you know, I was working on the next Terminator movie.
Yeah. It's a very regulated market. Right. So there's all kinds.
Yeah.
You know, there's what they can't say a whole lot outside of a boundary of certain phrases and things. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't really, you know, you're not going on video shoots with like sports cars or anything. It's exactly. Like, you know, here's a chart that shows bond averages. And you're like, great. This is excellent.
This is compelling TV.
Yeah, but it was interesting work because I was able to solve a lot of challenges. I was able to really grow as a marketer. Mm-hmm. But I knew the time for my exit was coming at the beginning of 2020. This is pre-pandemic. So this is, you know, January. Mm-hmm. So I start putting feelers in the water and I have this idea. I want to take all of this stuff I've learned and I want to bring it back to the small business community and help them. And so I start having pitches and I start doing, and everything's kind of normal. Then March hits, everything shuts down. Right. And I realize, well, for the rest of the year, I'm not selling anything.
Right.
So instead of going and trying to sell people on, hey, buy my consulting services for small business, I just start talking to small business owners and seeing like, what do you like about working with a marketing agency? What don't you like? What do you wish marketing agencies would do that they don't do?
Right.
And so I went through this whole process of really like understanding what small businesses actually needed from a marketer and what they weren't getting. Right. And I was shocked at how many small businesses, you know, I've never been asked these questions before.
Right.
I was like, all right, I'm onto something here. There's an untapped pain in this market.
Right.
And I just need to put the right pieces together to solve it.
Right.
And so end of the year comes around. I end that consulting gig. I'm still kind of like, we're 9 months into a pandemic at this point. I'm like, right, do I really want to go and try to start a business now? Like, I have all this information. I go and interview. I get a couple offers for CMO and head of marketing positions from some companies, a couple remote companies, a couple local companies. And I'm sitting down with my wife and I have them all spread out in front of me. And I'm walking her through as we're eating, you know, Jersey Mike's subs and talking about like what my next move is going to be. And I go through, I'm like, this one's this. And the dark horse of all of them were two guys from Philly that had reached out because I had submitted a job application like 2 years prior. Mm-hmm. They were like, hey, that job's no longer available, obviously. But we're starting this agency. Would you be interested in running it? And I was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting thing. So I'm going through and I'm telling my wife all these. And she's like, you don't sound excited for any of these. I'm like, I'm not. Like, yeah. I don't really like none of these make me get out of bed in the morning.
Well, because your DNA going back to your parents is that of not working for other people.
Exactly. And I was like, the only one that I'm like genuinely curious about is this offer to go run this agency. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, they're saying I have full creative control. I can take it whatever direction I want. I'd still be working for other people, but it's a heck of a lot more control I'd have than any of these other jobs where I have to kind of, you know, I have to fit their puzzle. I can't create my own puzzle.
Right.
And so she's like, well, I think you already made your decision, haven't you? I was like, yeah, I guess you did. So I called the four other companies and I said, yeah, no, I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. And then I called the two guys who ended up being my business partners for the next year. Mm-hmm. And we started this business. And that's really how the first version of Grow House got started. And one of the reasons I didn't like that deal was that I had to change the name. they had a name already picked out. They had some assets built. They wanted to go by Crackle Marketing. So part of the negotiation was we keep the name Crackle. I shelf grow house. I don't grow house while I'm working with Crackle. Mm-hmm. And we did that for a year. And then about almost a year later, I bought them out of the business.
Okay.
And took it back to grow house. And that's where we are today.
Awesome. So I'm just curious about the name. It's GRO, capital HAUS. The spelling of house is a little European. Is that something that means something to you, or?
Yeah, well, the name in its entirety has a couple of different kind of angles to it. So the first thing, obviously, is the Germanic inflect. We live in Pennsylvania Dutch country. Mm-hmm. So when I first started this, I really wanted to serve that community because those are my neighbors. Like that's why you start a small business, right? Is to serve your neighbors. Turns out I actually don't have any clients in Pennsylvania, I don't think. So that didn't really work out the way I planned. I have clients from all around the country, just none in Pennsylvania. I have had some here and there. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. I might have a client in Pennsylvania, but it's not proliferation.
Right.
So when I first started the brand, I was really leaning into like, well, this is like, if you go down the street, there's a lot of businesses that use
that. Oh, yeah. That's why I asked, because I'm familiar with that spelling.
But the whole concept of a grow house really goes back to my father, because his small business was a greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, the sad part about the story with my dad is that he saw his dream realized and then died a year later. Mm-hmm. And so he got to the top of the mountain. He saw everything. And so the name grow house really is an ode, I guess, is the best word, to his struggle to get his own business started in the actual, you know, growing plants. Just ties back to the whole reason I'm in this business in the first place, which really was the influence of my dad.
So what were the type of questions you asked some of those small businesses about their marketing needs? Because I think, you know, and the people that I talk to in the imaging space, or maybe, you know, run a camera store or run a photo lab, you know, all those kind of things, they just know they need marketing help, right? You know, they need that help, but they don't even know where to begin. What were some of the questions you used to prompt them to get them to think about marketing their own business?
I mean, really, that's the whole thing. I wasn't really asking them to try to prompt them into a sale. What I really was just thinking, curious about is like, how much money are you spending on marketing on average?
And how do you define marketing, right? I mean, that's the big question, right? Is marketing, you know, your social? Is it your printed materials you may hand out? Is it TV ads? Is it radio? Is it all of that? But that's advertising. That's not necessarily, you know, marketing is more than it, just advertising. So how do you define it for them? Or how did they define it for you, I should say?
I really say it's any activity that supports sales.
Okay.
Right. So sales obviously for every business is going to be a little different, right? It could be a guy at a counter selling you a product. It could be someone calling you on the phone. It could be a self-service website where you add stuff to your cart and check out.
Right.
It's whatever activities you're doing that support that activity. The principal activity of making revenue is that's what marketing is. So generating referrals is part of marketing. Sending out mailers is part of marketing. Doing posts on social media is part of marketing. Going to speak at a conference is part of marketing.
Right.
So I don't try to like pigeonhole people into like, well, this is marketing and this is with not marketing, because for every different business, it changes. I do live streams twice a week, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of my marketing, right? Mm-hmm. But for a business that for a pizza store, doing live streams twice a week or even once a week, it's probably not going to be necessarily effective for them, right? Because they're dealing with a local market. Who's going to watch it? Even if they are, you know, showing three or four people the making pizza, it's like, what's the real net result of that?
Right.
So for them, live streaming would be something fun to do. It wouldn't necessarily be part of marketing.
Right.
But say you had a really high tech local firm that did like custom footwear or something, and they wanted to try to grow their client base beyond the local market. Live streaming could be perfect for that.
Right.
So I think that's the thing, is that there's no hard and fast rule of like, this is marketing, this is not marketing. Mm-hmm. It changes for every business. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things I found, is that a lot of people define marketing differently. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were spending a lot of different money or didn't really have any accounting of money. Right. They had like, well, I spent this much on this and this much on this and this much on this and this didn't work. And then I got a refund for this. They didn't have a marketing budget whatsoever.
Right.
Then the other biggest thing that came out of that was that they really were struggling with the technology.
Right.
Is that they were really good at whatever they did. If the guy was a psychologist, he was a really great psychologist. People would rave about him and say, oh my God, he's helped me so much. By the end of the day, going on and launching a Facebook ad was like, you know, you might as well ask him to design a rocket for NASA. It just wasn't his thing.
Right.
And so that kept becoming a trend.
Right.
So there was this mix of like, I'm wasting money on marketing and I'm not seeing any result and I don't have any direction. And then the technology is really hard and I can't figure out how to make the technology work to my end. And then this general just sense of, I don't know what I'm doing. I know that I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
And that's scary.
Right.
Like that's really
I don't
scary.
Even know so what I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I heard that probably 15 times.
Yeah.
Like it's, and so it was that general sense of I'm stuck. I'm not growing. Right. I'm spinning my tires. And then these three very things, these three very specific things. I'm wasting a lot of money on marketing. I don't know how to use the technology and I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
And so I really pinpointed those as like, okay, that's the angle. Like it's not just another lead gen strategy. It's not just another social campaign. Mm-hmm. It's not just content marketing. This is the specific pain I need to solve. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've spent the last 3 years mm-hmm. designing a solution for. I'm pretty proud of it. I'm pretty proud of how we solve the problem.
You know, in the photo space, like camera stores, a lot of them, you know, I hear a lot of debating the merits of like classes and workshops, right? And so I've had conversations with some of these folks, you know, I don't make money off the classes very much, but it's great for marketing.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Like maybe even running classes as a break even, but you're using to raise awareness of your business as, hey, this we're the experts in photography, for example.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I would never poo-poo a workshop strategy mm-hmm. because so here's the thing you got to think about, right? Anyone right now can wake up and buy a camera on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
What is Amazon not going to provide? They're not going to provide support for that camera. They're not going to provide training on how to use that camera. They're not going to provide someone to help them compare. I mean, we were just talking about me buying this camera, right? There's not really any camera stores I know of in the area. I actually looked, the closest one was like 40 minutes away. I got a one-year-old. I can't be driving 40 minutes out and leaving my wife alone for an hour on the weekend when I'm working all week. So that's not an option. So I had to buy it from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to just take a stab in the dark that this was the right camera, that I wasn't going to regret this. Mm-hmm. It was a big investment. So if you're in a local market and you have people that know where you are and you're offering these services, you're going to greatly stand out to those buyers who don't really know what they're doing either. They're like, right. Well, I really want a camera to take good photos of my kid. Do I really need a $2,400 camera or can the $700 that good enough for me?
Yeah.
And then just buying one of these cameras. I mean, I can't tell you for the first week, I couldn't figure out how to live stream the camera to the computer.
Right.
I worked in production. I used to run crews of right. 20 people.
Right.
And I could not for the life of me figure out how to make the thing talk to my computer.
Right.
Now, it turns out it was the wire was bad. The wire they shipped with the thing was bad. And I plugged in a new wire and popped. Everything went on.
Oh, okay.
But man, wouldn't it have been nice if I could have taken that down to a camera shop and they would have just told me like, oh, your wire's bad. That's what's wrong. You have all the settings, right? But no, I had to go and watch 4 hours of YouTube videos trying everything under the sun and still failing.
Yeah.
You know, another example outside of the photo space is my daughter is 1.5 years old. She is obsessed with trains. She loves, in Richland, there's a train that goes through the town
mm-hmm.
and she is obsessed. We put a train up for Christmas. She's obsessed, just sit there and stare at it, loves watching it. We bought her another train for after Christmas. She loves it. But I don't know anything about trains. I'm not a train guy. Like she doesn't get it from me. Apparently we're talking to my mom. My dad was really into trains. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what I'm doing. But there's this little shop called Brian's Trains in Myerstown. Shout out to Brian's Trains if he ever sees this. But he runs this little shop and he is the most helpful guy you could ever imagine on trains, right? One of the trains I got doesn't smoke, right? Well, what kid doesn't want a non-smoking train? Like you want to give him a little puff of
the thing coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I bring it in and he helps me fix it. I have these, my daughter really wants these vintage cars, but they don't work with my new train. So he helps me sort it out so it has the right couplers to connect it. Do you think I could have gotten that service from Amazon
mm-hmm.
or Walmart or
mm-hmm.
Target?
Mm-hmm.
Not on your life. Mm-hmm. The whole benefit of being a small business is providing the service that all the big boys won't provide. Mm-hmm. None of those businesses are focused on training. The only big box store that does any kind of training is Home Depot, and they do the little kids workshop Saturday mornings. That's
right,
it.
Right.
Like that's your only competition.
Right.
So if you're a small business owner, if you're running a camera store and you're questioning whether not to do workshops, the writing's on the wall, man. Yeah. That's your competitive edge.
Yeah.
You know, now it's just a matter of getting the word out of that you're doing them.
Yeah.
Because once you get the word out, you will attract people for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are doing workshops. I mean, it's not really a new thing for them. A lot of them are doing. I know I've actually had somebody on the podcast who my friend, shout out to Mark Coleman from Paul's Photo, who actually has taken it to the next level. And he does African safaris. He goes around the world and he promotes the hell out of it. It's a great thing for him. But I think the challenge a lot of them have is, what is the benefit, right? They may not be seeing it as a promotional benefit. They look at it as, hey, you know, I need 10 people to spend $40 to make this worthwhile. And then they need to buy equipment afterwards, right? I need to have, you know, some Tamron lenses to sponsor so I can show some lenses. So, and it doesn't have to be that, I guess, is where I'm going, is that there's an intangible benefit of being that resource in the community that's going to have a halo effect on everything else they're doing.
100%. I mean, I have spent, out of all the small businesses I've gone to, I've spent more money with Brian's Trains in the past 4 weeks than any other small business. And the reason isn't because I'm now all of a sudden a train addict. It's because I needed stuff fixed. I didn't know how to fix stuff. I needed lights changed on the train that burnt out. I needed, my daughter wanted this little tanker car. But I'm not going to go anywhere else because he's my guy now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my wife and I, when we first moved in, we had an issue when we were buying the house and we had to get a lawyer. And it was the first time we ever had a lawyer. Like, we had gotten legal advice online. You know, you pay $100 and a lawyer will chat with you. But we had a physical guy in an office that we could go to and talk about legal stuff.
Right.
And we're on our way home and we just had a good conversation with him. And she turns to me and she goes, I'm really glad we have people now.
Yeah.
And I say, what do you mean? She's like, well, now that we have a house and we're settled, we have all these people, we have a lawyer and that's just our lawyer. And we know the guy that runs the pizza shop. That's our pizza shop. He knows, when we call him, he already knows our order. And he's like, I just love the fact that everywhere we go, we know somebody that's going to tailor the service to us and take care of us. And I was like, yeah, that is a really huge point that until you have it, you don't realize how much you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have it, you never trade it. I'd never go back to not using my lawyer and go back to Googling legal questions or you know, go to a different pizza place just because, you know, it moved in or something. It's like, no, well, Anthony knows my order. I'm not going to.
I'm not
gonna go anywhere else.
And as long as I mean, the challenge there is, you know, there's sort of the price elasticity issue, right? How much more are you gonna spend for Anthony to support the local business, local guy who does a great job versus, you know, chain store pizza that is, you know, Anthony's got to be competitive price-wise, right? I mean, that's sort of the thing is, you're right, he's got to have, you know, better service and hopefully better pizza, but, you know, he can't be $12 more for a medium than, you know, the local Domino's.
So I think the company that has actually figured this out, and you can just, you know, this is going to be a very local market thing, but this is how I would determine what your thresholds are. Mm-hmm. Go into an Ace Hardware and grab a coil of Romex, which is electrical wire. It's 3-strand copper wire. It'll be labeled something like 10-2 or 14-2 or something like that. Look at the price and then go to Home Depot and see how much they're charging for the same wire. That's your price differential. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why Ace can charge more is because Ace has better customer service, hands down, than Home Depot does, right? How many times have you been wandering around a Home Depot and no one's there?
Right.
All the time.
Right.
You never have that with Ace because part of their whole thing is that someone greets you at the door. Every single time I walk into my local Ace, someone goes, hey, how you doing? How can I help? Yeah. Immediately.
Right.
Right. So yeah. I am willing to pay that premium 10 times over. If I have a question, I'm going to Ace.
Right.
If I need something specific and I don't need to ask questions, I'm going to go to Home Depot, right? Because it's cheaper.
Right.
But if there's any question in my head, am I doing this the right way? Is there a better way to do it? Is there better tools? Right. Is there a better whatever? Ace has my loyalty even at the higher price point. So I would look at that. as the kind of standard, because their pricing and Home Depot's pricing, it runs very parallel in a lot of these markets. Right. It's always going to be, you know, 6% higher or whatnot. Right. And I would say that's where your safe spot is.
A lot of times, you know, people in niche businesses like photography or hardware or pizza or whatever, right, kind of do product first and then try and market around it. Do you talk to people about how marketing can drive your product selection?
Yeah, I would definitely inverse it. I mean, I think the whole benefit of running a camera store or any kind of business where you're having a consultative sale, you're asking the person, you know, what are you going to do with this camera? Oh, you're a food photographer? Well, this is the right camera for you. Oh, you're just taking photos of your pets in the backyard? Well, this is a better camera for you. That consultative approach is what people want. So I would, instead of going and saying, hey, I have the new Canon, where everybody else is just going to roll their eyes and goes like, yeah, so does everybody, right? It's not exclusive, right? You're not the only shop in town to have it. It's not like, a shipment arrived today and another one might not arrive for 6 months.
Right.
Not the world we live in anymore. So the consultative approach, the fact that you're going to help them, you're going to help them get set up, select the right camera. Once you have the camera in your hand, set it up to make the best use of it. That's really what I would spend my marketing on. And then I think the other thing is, with especially with photo businesses, is you have to go niche, because photography as a hobby has so many of these sub niches. And like, that's where I would really attack. Yeah. And I think like, you look at like a King Arthur flower, baking is similar to photography in that there's the general niche, but then there's these very specific sub niches. And King Arthur does it the same way. They run workshops on these sub niches. So if you want to learn how to make Indian breads, they have a class for that, right? And they have all the ingredients. They're going to sell you all the ingredients, but it's very, very niche. And you're like, well, who would go see that? Enough people for them to run a class every month.
Right.
Like, exactly. There's enough people.
Exactly.
So that's where I would go, is I would say, okay, what are the niches that you as the business owner really passionate? Are you an Ansel Adams landscape guy like me? If you're really into food and product, well, let's design workshops around that. Let's really target that sub niche, the people that are really interested in that, and become the source specifically for that group.
Right.
And then you can build it out from that. Oh, you know, I also want to get into pet portraiture. Okay.
And even like there, with film photography coming back, that's become a thing where, you know, a whole new,
right,
new class of customers are discovering film photography, which, you know, for some of us who lived through the analog to digital transition are looking at them kind of scratching their heads going, why? No, digital was an improvement over film, but now it's growing. I mean, it's crazy. People are flocking to film because they want that sort of tactile experience and, you know, that sort of thing. It's just like your King Flower thing. It's not the way it used to be, but there's enough people doing it where film photography is a thing.
I still have my Canon A1. Mm-hmm. It's upstairs. I haven't used it in a while, but it's still there. It's clean. Mm-hmm. It can run. I can just drop a roll of film in tomorrow and start shooting. Like, there are still people out there that like vintage stuff. My wife just bought me 2 jazz albums on vinyl for Christmas, right? I like listening to jazz on vinyl. Right. I just prefer it, right? And you could say, oh, that's very snobby or whatever. I don't care. Like, listen,
you're allowed to have preferences, right? Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like in this world, you know, you can have preferences. You can prefer something and it's not a knock on the other thing, right?
100%. And like, you know, I like we were listening to the Footloose soundtrack. She has that on vinyl too. Right. We put that on and we're listening to it and we're like, sounds terrible. Like, this is awful. We put on the same album on like the digital and it sounds crystal clear, high fidelity. It's beautiful. We're like, yeah, it's just some things, right? Classical music and jazz sound great on vinyl. I don't want to buy albums online that are digital jazz. It just sounds cold and dead. It sounds so much more rich and earthy. So there's people like that have those hardcore preferences that you can absolutely tap into. And it might not be a
Kenny Loggins.
People.
Kenny Loggins does not benefit from the analog process, is what you're saying.
Yes, I would say, as good as Kenny Loggins is, you could buy the first pressing of Footloose and it would still be really rough on the ears.
There you go. Tell me more about your live streams. Are you streaming any jazz or is it just the Footloose soundtrack? And how can people get more information for learning more about Grow House?
So you can visit us online, growhouse.org. That's where you can find more information about our agency and the services we provide. when in terms of the live streams, I do them Tuesday, Thursday. I have to check my schedule. It's 2 p.m. Eastern. And really, I'm doing two things. Tuesdays, I'm actually doing a behind the scenes breakdown on exactly how I built the agency, how I'm growing it. Like, really, it's the behind the scenes that I always wanted when I was coming up. And so if you're interested in how to grow, whether it's a creative service agency or a marketing agency or any type of agency where you're providing a service to people, I would definitely check that out on Tuesdays. And then Thursdays, I do interviews similar to this, where I bring on former clients that are in our Hall of Fame, have had like amazing results and great stories to share, as well as experts in the field. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitch, all the usual suspects for that, Twitter. It's Grow House everywhere. So I'll give you all the tags and everything so you can put them in the show notes. But yeah, look forward to seeing more of your listeners over there.
Well, thanks, Drew. It's great to talk to you, and look forward to connecting with you on one of your live streams soon.
Yeah, absolutely, Garrett. Love to have you on.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.